On today's show, we're going to continue to go through the coaching candidates. And today, it's Frank Vogel, another NBA championship coach. And there are plenty of experienced names out on the market. But we're going back in time. We're going to talk about his period with the Indiana Pacers, which, by the way, that team had a lot of success in the Eastern Conference as well. So let's get into a Frank Vogel conversation.
Backs him down. Giannis into the lane. Giannis spinning. Fading shot. Up. Go!
You are locked on Bucks. My name's Kane Pittman. You can see and hear me on this show Monday to Friday and also find my work over at ESPN. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code Locked On. That's prizepicks.com, promo code Locked On. And as always, we thank you for making Locked On Bucks and Locked On Pacers your first listen of every single weekday. We appreciate the support even through the off-season. And alongside me today, a man that covers the Pacers for a number of outlets. Right now, he's covering the Indiana Fever, and he's squeezing me in between pregame press conferences. But most importantly, the host of Locked On Pacers, Tony East. It's been a while since we got to hang out, but let's talk about coaches. What else have we got to talk about?
Well, can we talk about how jealous I am that you get to talk about Bucks both as a topic and in your ad reads? I feel like that synergy is very underrated.
Well, that's exactly right. It's a good time to be the host of Locked On Bucks. Although we're watching Miami Heat, the team that eliminated the Bucks, still going about their business. But I guess if you're a Celtics hater, maybe you're feeling pretty good at the moment. And I think there are some Bucks fans that fall in that category. But we've been rolling through the coaching candidates for this Bucks job for well over a week now. And every single day, it feels like there are more candidates. I'm getting comments in the YouTube stream, and they're like, when are you going to do the podcast about this guy? And we're trying to roll through them all. But Frank Vogel is another one of these really, really experienced coaches that is potentially on the market, but he's been out of the game a little bit comparatively to some of these other coaches that we've discussed. Let me just ask you this straight up. Would you expect, or did you expect, when things didn't pan out the way they did with the Lakers for Frank Vogel, despite the fact he won a title, that he would be back in the game soon? What's your gauge? Because I'm absolutely certain you know a hell of a lot more about Frank Vogel than I do.
Yeah, I thought he would. I mean, I think the thing about Vogel that's kind of lost, right? He only took 1 year of gap between Orlando and LA, right? The short gap between the Pacers and Magic is like, he has this perception as this defensive coach. And to be clear, he is a good defensive coach, but he has the perception of a defensive coach. I think he's kind of an underrated player developer. And that's why I think his swath of jobs that make sense for him is what it is, right? Orlando hired him because of that, right? They were young and developing at the time. And yeah, they wanted to be better than a 20 something win team back then. But, you know, with the Pacers, Paul George went from a 7-8 points per game score to, oh my gosh, this guy's toe to toe with LeBron in the conference finals 2 years in a row. And other young players got a lot better. Like, I don't think it's his forte necessarily, but the fact that he can be more than just, you know, let me implement a defense and get guys in the right spots. He did a good job with that, obviously, when the Lakers won a title, I think means he fits more jobs than people give him credit for. And is why I was not surprised necessarily. Like a lot of coaches take just 1 year off sometimes after the gruel of a job, especially one like the Lakers. But I would be, you know, a little surprised if he's another year out of the game, just because I do think he's a really good NBA coach.
Yeah, I should have looked this up, but I can't remember off the top of my head. But another reason why some of these guys take a year off is because they're still getting paid a significant amount of money. And Bud fits in that category, and Monty Williams is in that category as well. Although I think, you know, certainly Monty Williams seems like he's going to get a job somewhere this offseason. So you mentioned the offensive, defensive stuff, and I definitely want to get into that as we continue this chat. But if we just look at the overall record for Frank Vogel in Indiana, six seasons, well, five and a half seasons, I guess you would call it, but 250 and 181, a 58% winning record, two trips to the Eastern Conference Finals. How do Pacers fans look back on the Frank Vogel era, and I guess him as a coach in general and the success the team had, because let's face it, you weren't the only team that ran into LeBron James and had troubles getting beyond him.
Yeah, he was looked at really fondly. I think a big part of it was he followed up one of the worst coaches the Pacers have had in the last 25, 30 years in Jim O'Brien. That era was going nowhere fast, and they had just drafted Paul George. Sure, like from a roster perspective, they were about to get better. But even in PG's rookie year, they were like a 40, less than that win percentage team with JOB. They fire him and go to Vogel, and they have a winning record the rest of that season with Vogel running the exact same team, right? Like, just the change in voice was helpful. And then obviously playoffs next year, conference finals soon after. Like, his voice clearly was significant for this team. And it was their two most successful seasons since the brawl, right? Which is, of course, significant for a team that had to kind of reshape their entire image and era after, you know, one of the staining moments of the NBA. To finally have a new coach and the right team to do that was really significant for the franchise. He had the unfortunate reality of Paul George's injury derailing his second to last season, right? That is a stain on his record that isn't his fault, right? They went 38 and 44 that year after a conference finals year, but they didn't have Paul George for all but six games. And then in his last year, it was kind of clear that stuff was shifting. Miles Turner came in. They traded away George Hill. Like, it was kind of a newer team that they did fine. They made the postseason, but you know, that the PG injury kind of shifted the end. But at his apex, and when he really had, when his voice was being heard the absolute most, he was very good and exactly what a franchise needed that just was coming off of one of their worst coaches. He was also a victim to Larry Bird's old philosophy that coaches kind of lose their voice after only like three or four seasons. Larry Bird himself only coached the Pacers for three seasons. So that was part of the reason they switched to Nate McMillan, although Bird himself also stepped away at a similar time. I'm providing more information than you asked for, but yes, he is well thought of in this market, and some were even surprised that they switched from him to McMillan when it happened because of the success he had, especially when the team was at its best under him.
No, I was going to ask that anyway, in terms of why they did end up changing head coach. I mean, the Lakers situation is a little bit different, but you know, you talk about Frank Vogel, the player developer, and it did feel like a new era for the Pacers, but yeah, maybe also it would have made sense to keep him on board. I was actually having a conversation with someone last night about the fact that these head coaches, it doesn't feel like, outside of Spoelstra, and obviously Popovich is still there, but Bud, five successful years in Milwaukee, Monty Williams having success, the patience isn't there, and these teams do seem to want to turn over these coaches. All right, I want to get into the specifics of the defense-offense stuff coming up next, because you already hinted to it. There is this idea that Frank Vogel is not the best offensive coach, and I think that's what the Bucks want. I think that's what certainly I'm looking at in terms of what they can bring to the table. So we'll get to that next after we talk about Prize Picks. They've got a pretty ridiculous offer going on right now. The $1 million daily super flex promotion throughout the NBA playoffs and finals. Every day of the NBA playoffs and finals, one Prize Picks user will win a chance at becoming a millionaire. One entry placed after 8 a.m. Eastern will be randomly selected each day. Whoever placed that entry will be given a six-pick flex with the following payouts: 6 correct picks, $1 million; 5 correct picks, $80K; 4 correct picks, $16K. Full details can be found at prizepicks.com/million. You must opt in at this link to be eligible for the $1 million entry. Once you opt in, all you have to do is play the game like normal, and you could be the lucky winner. And if you've been playing Prize Picks through the Western Conference Finals, if you're taking the over on Jamal Murray points, you're probably feeling pretty good about yourself. So make sure you go and check it out. Download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com to sign up and play daily fantasy sports. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code Locked On. Don't forget to enter the promo code Locked On at sign up for an instant deposit match up to $100. I mentioned it off the top, but we appreciate the support for Locked On Bucks and Locked On Pacers. It's free to drop a like and comment and subscribe and all those types of things and give your opinion on Frank Vogel as the next head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. We want to hear from you, so make sure you do that. It supports us. It pushes the show to the top of the list. More people are watching and listening, which we appreciate. So thanks for the support. And as I said, make sure you check out Locked On Pacers as well. Frank Vogel being purely a defensive coach, how do you respond to that?
It's not inaccurate, I would say, but it's not that far away. Part of the reason Bird wanted a new voice and a new leader was the offense was never quite the level the Pacers needed, right? The second year he was the head coach, with the Pacers, 2011-12, his first full season really running the team. Danny Granger was still awesome, hadn't gotten hurt yet, and Paul George was ascending. That team was a pretty solid offensive team. They finished seventh in offensive rating. Every other year he ran the Pacers, they were like 20th or worse in offensive rating, and their defense was so amazing that it didn't matter. They were first in defense 3 years in a row. They obviously, again, were one game from the finals. They were two games away the following year. Like, they were really good still because his defensive abilities are so impressive. But the offense was awful, and it was to the point that they went to Nate McMillan, who still no one thinks of as an offensive coach, but they felt like that change would be better. You can do the same things with the Lakers. The year they won the championship, sure, the Lakers were 11th in offense. The next year, 24th, barely squeaking in as the seventh seed. The next year, 23rd, and he's out in LA too, right? That is where the perception of him is a little accurate, in that he will get he will squeeze every bit of juice out of a defensive group. Kane, you, me, and any three NBA players, top 10 defense under Frank Vogel, right? But the offense is going to be, you know, maybe a little clunkier or two-star dependent. And maybe with Giannis, he can, again, do what he did with the Lakers and get them to like 11th or 12th. And he had that good year with Granger and PG kind of both being good at the same time. But in general, there is a reason he has that perception. That's because the numbers back it up, right? Every year they're good enough on offense to squeak by with an amazing defense. And I think that is kind of reflective of his strengths as a coach.
It's interesting. I think what you've just said is going to be a downfall or crossing the box for a number of our listeners for this show. It'll be fascinating to hear what they say. The one comparison that I do make, and it's interesting the way it panned out, but Roy Hibbert and Brook Lopez, the way they at least defend, because I'm trying to think, if you're coming into Milwaukee, and let's just assume Brook Lopez is back, Giannis is there, Drew Holiday is there, and who knows, anything could happen with the roster. But I don't think you really need to bring in a defensive specialist coach, right? Like, you should automatically be, I mean, top 10 at worst with those players on the roster. So do you think that it would even make sense for the Bucks to hire Frank Vogel given the current personnel?
Maybe so. I mean, the stuff he did from a pick and roll coverage perspective with George Hill and Roy Hibbert, like, still influences the way guards defend pick and rolls today. Could George Hill go back to the Bucks? Maybe that would be a part of this calculus.
It's been a while. He's going to come back. Let's have another go.
I don't think he'll be leaving Indiana anytime soon. Either way, you can see those influences still now with the way the Bucks defend and the way their best defenders are. So the fact that they already have those positives, maybe they don't need another voice telling them the same thing. I don't know how much they would change, right? What's Frank Vogel going to do to raise the Bucks defense significantly? Maybe he can make it a little better, but at what cost? Or is that minor benefit worth whatever other strengths maybe another coach could offer? I do think he can help. I think he can help any team defensively, quite frankly. He's very strong on that end of the floor, but maybe not as much as the benefit if the Bucks are looking for better offensive coach or playoff tactician, maybe, that they need elsewhere, if that makes any sense.
So one of the big questions that, and one of the assumptions we're making, because it seems pretty obvious, that if you're interviewing for the Bucks job, the first questions are going to revolve around Giannis. What would you have done, obviously, in the series against Miami? How will you utilize Giannis, particularly on the offensive side of the ball? And a big part of basketball, and if you're a head coach these days, is the relationships. You already mentioned Paul George, but obviously then Frank Vogel went to the Lakers. I know you can't specifically speak to that, but in your time of sort of covering teams, watching teams that Frank Vogel was coaching, how was his relationship with the star players and, I guess, Paul George?
Yeah, you know this as well as anyone, Kane, that, you know, the part of coaching we can see is what, 15% of the job tops, yeah. Like the human management, the people management. How do you address a locker room after a 5-game losing streak, right? That is a very hard part of coaching. And that is somewhere that players talk about a lot, right? They just want a coach who's going to, and in the best tone possible, shoot straight with them, right? And tell them how it is, but not be derogatory, not set them up for failure, not screw them. And I think Vogel's pretty good at that, right? They're never heard a peep out of complaints out of anybody here personally, myself. And here's the thing though, when you're winning, no one really complains, right? And they were really good for most of his tenure. In the years they were bad, it was because he took over for a new coach and because Paul George was injured for all but 6 games. So there was like kind of a built-in like, we get it. So that is part of it, right? When you're losing and you think you're going to be good, that is the hardest part of coaching. And I never myself saw him in that way, but he got everybody in the right seat on the bus. That's a phrase the Pacers use in the past to kind of describe guys in the right roles, and everybody was kind of happy with what they are. There was always the talk about would PG play the four? That never quite got through to him. That never happened. In fact, he played more two than four in Indiana. I think if you wanted to talk about positional versatility or guys playing different roles, you could call that a stain maybe on Vogel, maybe even not on Vogel and put it on McMillan later. I don't know exactly the dynamics of who was asking him specifically to do that and why that never took place. But in general, I think that some of it is that he's good at player and star management, right? There's a reason the Lakers were willing to hire him for their job, and coaching a guy like LeBron means you could probably coach any star, right? That's one of the, not that he's difficult to manage, but his teams can be just in general. But you never really know because his teams have always been winning, right? What does that look like when they're not? And hey, as soon as the Lakers stopped winning, he was no longer the coach of the Lakers.
All right. I've got, and this is going to be fascinating because every time we do these podcasts, it's interesting to see the reaction. We did a Nick Nurse podcast and Sean was very, very complimentary and everyone was on board. So I'm looking forward to the reaction from everyone. Drop your comments, Tony. I know you're busy. I've got a couple of quick ones to wrap this up and then I'll be out of your way. So we'll get to those next about some familiar names for Bucks fans. All right. Let me just quickly ask about Rick Carlisle. He was a coach that Bucks fans wanted during the 2021 postseason run when the Bucks were down to the Brooklyn Nets. How have you found the Rick Carlisle experience?
I love talking to Rick Carlisle. I think he is one of the most misconstrued people. Like, he is really interested in processes and details and all these sorts of things. And he loves like these little individual moments with players, we can help them learn a skill or develop in some way. And that's what the Pacers have become. Now, certainly he was hired to lift them up from their 34-38 Nate Bjorkgren season. And that did not happen. Obviously they had to rebuild significantly from that era and that team. But he is just like, he's really good at being creative and finding ways to maximize a team's identity, right? He figured out really quickly, oh my gosh, this Tyrese Haliburton guy is a genius. I'm going to change our system to play to his strengths and get everybody else in a situation where they can play to his strengths. Okay, this is our guy. This is our identity. Everybody else who's good at that, you're going to play. You're going to be in a position to help accentuate what we're going to do. This is the style we have now. No more of that old stuff that we were doing last year. No more of the pace we had with Brogdon and Sabonis. Bucks fans know the Brogdon speed all too well, although he played point guard here and not there. Instead, we're playing fast. We're playing Tyrese Haliburton ball. Oh my gosh, we're way better already, right? Like, clearly he's good at getting that out of young players, setting up good systems that accentuate a team's positives around a star. And the fact that that's gone with at least pretty reasonably good development for young players. Mathurin was obviously terrific this year. So is Nembhard. I think says a lot about his kind of versatility as a coach as well. And he's done very well, both from the perspective of trying to get this team to win again and developing young talent, which I think people don't really think of him in that young talent way, right? Like pre-Luka Doncic, he never really played rookies. It was a big deal when Justin Anderson was playing for him in the playoffs like 6 years ago. So he's really evolved and done well with this Indiana team, I think. Although Pacers fans, is there a fan base that likes their coach, Kane? Like, I think the answer is no. Fans don't think he's a good coach. I think Rick Carlisle is a very good coach.
If Miami fans are complaining, they need to.
I hate to rant on your show, but it's just insane. Like, Warriors fans were like, oh, Steve Kerr, you're terrible. I'm like, what are you talking? It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
It's definitely the way it goes for just about every team across the league. All right, two guys I want to ask you about. George Hill. So George Hill, I felt like throughout this season, I was in George Hill defense mode all season long. People were in the comments. They weren't happy with me. He was a guy that I think fell out of favor because he played hurt in last postseason. And this year, I thought he was playing decent basketball. I actually felt bad for him that he was traded for a second time from a Bucks team that was trying to win a title. I wanted to see him on a team that hopefully would win a title. It clearly didn't work out that way. But everything that I read and every time I watched the Pacers through the back end of the season, there was always a George Hill bit in the broadcast about what he was contributing to this team. What did George Hill bring in the back end of the season?
Well, first of all, he brought them a win in their last game when fans were hoping they wouldn't beat the Knicks. 17 yes. points in a half-court shot. It didn't matter in the end for their lottery. But yeah, he's like the perfect locker room guy, right? Not only because he's like here's what I think. It's kind of like if you play and you're bad, it's hard to be a leader. But if you don't play and your experience is that you're great, you're a great leader. And he was like perfect for that latter kind of role where he very rarely played. but his history kind of speaks for itself, right? Was on the last great Pacers team. We just talked about the Vogel era, right? He was on those squads. He was a crucial member of them, evolving pick and roll defense in his career. He was good enough that the Pacers traded away Kawhi Leonard for him. That was a mistake, but hey, that worked out great. He's played with Paul George. He's played with LeBron James. He's played with Giannis. He's played with Embiid, right? He has the star pedigree. He knows how to be teammates with those guys. He's seen their habits up close. Like, he's been in so many experiences that a young player would like to know more about or hear more about or take from, that him and James Johnson are like the perfect veteran combo for this team of like toughness and advice and just experiences. And yeah, he was perfect for it. But it helped too that he has the Pacers connections and he's from Indy, right? He still does a lot of local work around here, even when he wasn't with the Pacers anymore. And they, you know, I think this has been reported. I'm sure you guys talked about it, but he even said, like, they gave him the option of, hey, we'll let you go to a contender. And he's like, no, I want to stay here. And he stayed because he loves being in Indiana and being with the Pacers. He wants to retire a Pacer in what he calls the Udonis Haslem role, which sounds like the best possible role for any veteran player in the NBA, if you can get it. So yeah, he was exactly what they needed. His experience was exactly what they needed. And he wasn't just like a salary ballast in this Crowder trade. I think the Pacers were like, you know what? If we have to keep George Hill, we're very happy to do that.
Yeah, James Johnson, talking about guys that every time I watch the Pacers, I was reminded that he's still in the league, on a roster and in the Pacers. So quickly, Malcolm Brogdon. How do Pacers fans feel about Malcolm Brogdon? Because you already mentioned him. And I think by the time he left, there was a little bit of frustration with Bucks fans that clearly a very good player. But there was a sense that your best role is exactly what you're doing for the Boston Celtics right now. And it's kind of funny the way that it's kind of gone through all this. And now he's back on a contender playing that six-man role. Minutes are able to come down, so he's not hurt all the time. It just feels like after all this, it's like this is what the Bucks actually would have been better off with you doing.
Yeah, look, the Pacers fan frustration, and this was a theme of the era he was involved in, was the injuries, right? He played 146 games in 3 years, right? That's less than two seasons worth of games. Mm-hmm. You know, and there was an abbreviated season in there, like whatever. But he only played 36 games in his final season with the Pacers. And I always thought he was good. Like, there were times that I said, I think he's the best player on the team. Like, he was playing better than Sabonis at his absolute best. But that wasn't all the time. And that was up and down. And I think starting point guard is just too big of a role for Malcolm Brogdon in the NBA, as much as he wanted that to be the case. And, you know, I was talking to John Corrales on a Locked On Celtics podcast earlier this season, and I kind of described what he's doing with the Celtics. Jeremy Grant had this season as well, as Goldilocks theory, right? With the Bucks, that's a little bit, that's too little, right? That's not enough, Malcolm Brogdon. You need a little bit more. With the Pacers, whoa, that's too much, Malcolm Brogdon. Right. Let's tone it back a little bit. And then Boston was like, okay, we'll get this just right. And you can even see that in his usage rate, where it peaked at 20.5 with the Bucks. It was over 24 every year with the Pacers. Now it's at like 22.5, right? Like, that is exactly how much Malcolm Brogdon a team needs to be good. So I always thought he was talented. Like, he got better at getting a half step around guys off the dribble. His chemistry with Sabonis was good. He was great off the court guy, as Bucks fans know. Like, he's definitely a good player, and he's very good when he's playing next to the right stars, as the Celtics have shown this season and as the Bucks showed for years. He was amazing in the playoffs for Milwaukee for a couple stretches there. But he was a little overcast here as like a 25% usage creator. That's too much for him, especially with the injuries that he had. So I think the fans just soured on the missed games, even though he was clearly talented and along the way. And then they did well to get what they did out of him just because Aaron Nesmith was so good for them. But you know, I think that is how I would describe Malcolm Brogdon, is the Celtics have it just right. They're the first team that's got him in the perfect spot for what his skill set is.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. The Bucks could have used him in this postseason. That's absolutely for sure. All right, I think I told you 15 minutes. We're gone. Well,
can I ask you a question about Malcolm Brogdon?
Here we go. Absolutely. I thought I was taking too much time.
What do you make of all the narratives that they cheaped out on that? Do you think it's wrong?
No, because I think – so would I have wanted to keep Malcolm Brogdon on that roster? I think it's obvious. But I think it was also clear that he wasn't happy with the role. I think that they knew as time went on that there was going to be financial decisions to be made. And I just think it was too much money to pay a guy that you couldn't rely on from a health standpoint, because in the two seasons prior to that, it got to about game 60 in the season. And then he had a pretty serious injury that took him out for weeks or months leading into the postseason. So I think there are a number of factors that contributed to that. But ultimately, I don't know this for a fact, but I don't believe that he was that happy in Milwaukee. And I think that he wanted to move.
he really wanted to be a point guard, right? Yeah. And I don't think the Bucks could ever have offered that. But this is a guess. I would guess if it wasn't a sign and trade with the picks involved, the Bucks would have matched. That's my official guess on what would have happened. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
Yeah, I mean, it was such an interesting time as well. After 1 year of the Bucks making the postseason and then letting such a key player roll out, and then obviously the Eric Bledsoe stuff didn't work out. They were able to figure, Bledsoe being in a trade for Jrue Holiday, which, by the way, that's probably why George Hill was happy to stay in Indiana, because the last time he was traded, he went to Oklahoma City, and I don't think that was a situation he was looking for as well. But look, Pacers in the Bucks, Central Division rivalry.
I sabotaged your Frank Vogel questions. I apologize.
No, this was perfect. I said, I told you 15 minutes. It's Sunday morning. We're both in the same country. What a world.
Yeah, I know. I can't believe it. And I'm not in Australia, for those curious what country we're in.
You enjoy the Fever game. And as I said right off the top, make sure you check out Locked On Pacers and Locked On Bucks. Fascinating offseason for both teams. Kind of in a different situation. Bucks fans screaming out for some younger talent. The Pacers are stacked with younger talent. But we'll see what both teams do through the offseason. As I've said the whole time, make sure you keep dropping your comments in terms of what podcasts you want to see, what coaches you want to hear me talk about, and I'll try and drag someone on the show that can provide a little bit more expertise about that candidate than I certainly can. And Tony did that for us today. Always good to catch up. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me, Kane. Much appreciated. If you are interested in the young Pacers, Locked On Pacers is the way to go.
Exactly right. Check out that show and check out Locked On Bucks. We'll be back tomorrow and right throughout the week with some good stuff coming up.